This is Audible.
Recorded Books and One Click Digital present An Obvious Fact by Craig Johnson. Narrated by me, George Goodell. Chapter 1. I tried to think how many times I'd kneeled down on asphalt to read the signs, but I knew this was the first time I'd done it in Hewlett. Located in the northeast corner of the Wyoming Black Hills, the town is best known for being the home of Devil's Tower. I looked at the macadam blend, the stones shining in the mix that were still wet from the early morning rain, and sighed. With the advent of anti-lock brakes, it was hard enough to properly estimate the speed of a vehicle involved in a traffic accident, never mind in the rain.
"Do you see anything?"
I nudged my hat farther back on my head and turned to look at the large Indian leaning against the door of Lola, his Baltic blue 59 Thunderbird, and my granddaughter's namesake. "How about you come over here and take a look for yourself?" Henry Standing Bear didn't move and continued to study the large book in his hands.
"I am on vacation."
I was kneeling at the apex of a sweeping curve on State Route 24, where the road veered off toward Matotipala, the Cheyenne name for the first United States National Monument, so declared by Teddy Roosevelt in 1906.
"There is traffic coming."
I didn't hear anything, but that didn't mean he wasn't right. So I walked to the edge of the road and watched as a phalanx of motorcyclists came around the corner and descended toward us like a flock of disgruntled magpies. They slowed, not for me, I wasn't in uniform, but because of the corpuscle red Indian motorcycle with the modified KTM extended rear axle dirt bike that roosted on the flatbed trailer behind the Thunderbird. The leather-clad cyclist thumbed their horns and gave a collected thumbs up to the Cheyenne Nation as he leaned there, looking as if he were negotiating a treaty, with his muscled arms folded over his chest, the first volume of Leslie S. Klinger's The New Annotated Sherlock Holmes, The Complete Short Stories, in one hand. "You could have waved back." He shook his head.
"That would not fit with the tourist's stereotypical vision of the stoic yet noble savage."
I glanced at the book. "Is that mine?"
"Yes. I took it from your shelves. I did not think you would mind if I borrowed it."
I glanced back at Devil's Tower, crowding the horizon. The geologic area around the megalith is not of the same composition as the tower itself, and the belief is that about 50 to 60 million years ago, during the Paleogene period, an igneous intrusion forced its way up through the local sedimentary stone. Some saying it was an ancient volcano, some saying it was a laccolith, an uncovered bulge that never made it to the surface.
"You know how it got its name, right?"
"Yours or ours?"
I ignored him and started back toward the T-Bird. When Colonel Richard Irving Dodge led an expedition back in 1875, his interpreter got it wrong and referred to it as Bad God's Tower, which then became Devil's Tower without the apostrophe, as per the geographic standard. I opened Lola's passenger door and eased in. The bear climbed into the driver's seat and studied me. I reached back and stroked Dog's head.
"You don't care." "About what?"
"The apostrophe." He hit the ignition on the big bird.
"I care that a delegation of my people attempted to have the name restored to Bear Lodge National Historic Landmark, but your U.S. representative killed it."
"The name change will harm the tourist trade and bring economic hardship to area communities."
I knew the man he was talking about, and I had to admit that his nasal imitation was spot on. "But as an expert, what's your feeling on the apostrophe?" He grunted and placed the book between us.
"There is nothing more deceptive than an obvious fact."
Pulling the vintage convertible into gear, he patted the book.
"Sherlock Holmes."
"Did you borrow all three volumes?" He pulled onto the vacant road.
"Yes."
"Oh, brother." It took a while to drive the 9 miles into Hewlett. 18 minutes, to be exact, because 30 miles an hour was as fast as Henry Standing Bear was willing to drive Lola, the car, especially while towing Lucy, the motorcycle, and Rosalie, the dirt bike. The bear liked giving vehicles women's names. We skipped Hewlett's main street to avoid the 50,000 or so motorcycles parked on both sides of the road. The town's population of just around 400 multiplies under the August sun as bikers from around the world arrive for the nearby Sturgis Motorcycle Rally, which pulls in close to 1 million bikers each year. Held in the town of the same name just across the border in neighboring South Dakota, the rally lasts a week. On the Wednesday of that week, Hewlett throws what they call the Ham and Jam, offering free music and 1,000 pounds of pork, 300 pounds of beans, and 200 pounds of chips. They also celebrate something they call No Panties Wednesday, though nothing in the official literature mentions the missing undergarments. Our destination was the Ponderosa Cafe and Bar, and the rally in the alley, which was handy because the gravel back street was the only place where there was a parking spot large enough for the car and the trailer. Henry eased the Thunderbird through the crowd and parked behind a tent set up to sell T-shirts, patches, do-rags, and other souvenirs. "Today's Monday, right?"
"All day."
I glanced around at the hundreds of people milling about. "And the actual Ham and Jam doesn't start until Wednesday?"
"My thought exactly."
"Do you think you should put the top up?" He shut his door and looked at the very blue sky.
"Why? I do not think it is going to rain again this morning."
I shrugged and glanced at Dog, the 150-pound security system. "Stay, and don't bite anybody." A woman in a provocative leather outfit, a lot of hair and a multitude of rose tattoos, paused as she passed us. "Is he mean?"
"Absolutely."
As I said this, he reached his bucket head over the side door and licked her shoulder with his wide tongue.
"Well, almost absolutely."
She smiled a lopsided smile which revealed a missing tooth and continued on down the road. I looked at Dog.
"Just so you know, you could get a disease."
He didn't seem to care and just sat there wagging at me. Moving to the trailer, I watched as the bear used a chamois cloth to remove what dust had collected on the Indian motorcycle. "Why do people ride these contraptions anyway?" He checked the tie-down straps and stood.
"Freedom."
"Freedom to be an organ donor." I glanced up and down the crowded alley. "T.E. Lawrence died on a motorcycle. You know what I make of that?"
"He should not have left Arabia."
Henry climbed over the railing and stood next to me.
"Where are we supposed to meet him?"
"Here." I looked around, but I don't see him. The Cheyenne Nation took a step and glanced down the alley, choked with bikers of every stripe, and plucked the annotated Sherlock from the fender rail where he'd left it.
Maybe he was called away.
"The only police officer assigned to a 50,000 biker rally?" I smiled. "Maybe." He carefully placed the book under his arm.
"There's always the Hewlett Police Department."
He glanced around.
"If I were a police department, where would I be?"
"At 123 Hill Street, right off Main, as 24 makes the turn going north."
"Far?"
"Almost a block." He started off, intuitively, in the correct direction.
"The game is afoot."
I shook my head and followed as we made our way, taking in the sights, sounds, and smells that are Ham and Jam. "Doesn't smell too bad, but maybe it's because I'm hungry." He nodded and smiled at two lithesome beauties in halter tops as they grinned at him.
"What happened to your native stoicism?" "Well, anything can be taken to excess."
The crowd in front of Captain Ron's rodeo bar on the corner was spilling onto the street in joyous celebration of the open container law, which allowed alcoholic beverages to be consumed in the open air during rally week. The party was in full swing, the sounds of the Allman Brothers' Statesboro Blues drifting through the swinging saloon doors. I looked back at the bear.
"Two of the Allman Brothers died on motorcycles. What do you make of that?" "That if you are an Allman Brother, you should not ride a motorcycle."
I sidestepped a short, round individual who was wearing a Viking helmet and drinking from a red plastic cup, but Henry got cut off.
"How you doing, Chief?"
The Cheyenne Nation half-smiled the paper-cut grin he reserved for just these situations.
"I am not a chief. I am Henry Standing Bear, headsman of the Dog Soldier Society Bear Clan." He leaned in over the man, the bulk of him filling the sidewalk. "And who are you?"
The Viking didn't move, probably because he couldn't. Eddie. The bear extended his hand.
"Good to meet you, Eddie. The next time we see each other, I hope you remember to address me in a proper fashion."
They shook, and Henry left Eddie the Viking there, utterly dumbstruck. Not that I think it took much.
Oh, this is going to be an interesting 2 days.
We rounded the corner, the crowd thinned out, and we stood in front of the Hewlett Police Department office, located next to what looked to be a 15-ton military vehicle. The Cheyenne Nation rested a fist on his hip and stared at the white monstrosity.
"What is that?"
I shook my head and pushed open the Hewlett Police Department door. It was a small office as police officers go, with a counter and 2 desks on the other side. An older, smallish man sat at one of them with his hat over his face. He started when I closed the door, but the hat didn't move.
"By God, before you say anything, whoever you are, there better be a bleeding body lying in the street before you wake me all the way up."
"You haven't been all the way woke up since I met you."
He slipped the hat off and looked at me.
"How the hell are you, Walt, long arm of the law?"
I spread my palms, vacationing. He stood and placed the straw hat on his head.
"In lovely Hewlett, Wyoming?"
He walked over and, making a face, shook my hand.
"During ham and jam?"
He glanced at the Cheyenne Nation and then extended the same hand to him.
"Understanding, Bear, you come over here to show all these lawyers, dentists, and accountants what a real outlaw looks like?"
Henry shook.
"How are you, Nutter Butter?"
William Nutter had been the chief of police in Hewlett for as far back as anyone could remember. A tough individual with a mind of his own, he kept the town running smoothly. If the man had an enemy in the world, I didn't have an idea who that might be.
"Ready to retire, and even more so after this last weekend."
I nodded and threw a thumb over my shoulder.
"What in the name of all that's holy is that behemoth sitting out there?"
He smiled.
"An MRAP. Stands for Mine-Resistant Ambushed Protected. We got a bunch of that Patriot Act money that's still around, and some funding from a local citizen named of Bob Nance. He wrote up all the paperwork for us. Hell, the federal government's got 12,000 of the things. We grabbed one before the ban."
"Your town has less than 400 people in it."
He gestured toward the overcrowded street.
"Not today, it doesn't."
Henry parted the Venetian blinds and peered at the thing.
"What are you going to do with it?"
Nutter shrugged.
"I don't know. We got to figure out how to start it first."
His eyes played around the littered room.
"I got the manual around here somewhere, if you guys want to give it a try."
"It's very white."
"It was used by the United Nations."
"What does it weigh?"
"About 15 tons.
"And how many miles to the gallon does it get?"
"I don't know. Maybe 3?
He leaned on the counter and tugged at his hat like he was saddling up.
"We're not allowed to use any town or county money to maintenance the thing, so either Bob needs to come up with some more funding, or what is going to end up being is a big white lawn ornament."
He smiled as Henry continued to stare at the massive vehicle.
"She's a beauty, though, isn't she?"
I scrubbed a hand over my face and changed the subject to the one at hand.
"So you want to tell us about the incident this last weekend?"
He shook his head.
"No, I'd rather you talk to the investigating officer, who I assume is the one who called you."
He did. I studied Nutter, taking in the accumulation of lines on his face, more than I'd remembered from last time. He moved toward a radio console and, holding up a finger toward us, picked up one of the old-style desk mics.
"Woof, woof! Hey, Deputy Dog, where are you?"
There was a pause, and then a voice I recognized came over the speaker.
"Please don't call me that."
Nutter immediately barked into the mic again.
"Woof, woof, woof! Where are you? The Lone Ranger and Tonto are here for a powwow."
There was another pause.
"I'm down here in front of the Pondo doing a sobriety test on a guy who thinks riding drunk is the same as stumbling down the sidewalk."
There was a voice in the background and more conversation before he came back on.
"I'm right here on Main Street. How did I miss them?"
We came in and parked in the alley. Nutter relayed the message and then sent us on our way back to the Ponderosa Cafe and Bar. As we closed the door, he called out, "Don't forget to ask Deputy Dog how he got his name." It was stupid.
It usually is. I leaned back in my chair, sipped my coffee, and studied the former Gillette patrolman and Campbell County deputy, Corbin Dougherty.
Our canine guy was a little weird.
They usually are. He sighed.
The dog companies were sending us all these samples, you know, shock collars and stuff. So the canine guy gets to wondering how bad the shock is.
The Cheyenne Nation, who had been gazing out the window, turned back to look at the deputy.
What did he ever do to you?
He shrugged.
His dog bit me. I mean, he's the canine guy, so he should have control over his dog, right?
Corbin looked around the packed cafe and lowered his voice.
I told him he should try one on. You know, get a feeling for the things before he put them on his dog?
No.
Yes.
He glanced around again.
So we're in the day room, and this idiot puts the dog collar on. I don't mean just held it there. I mean he buckled the thing on around his neck. So then he starts barking real low, like woof.
I peered at him through the fingers covering my face.
Barking?
Honest to God. I guess he figured since it was a dog shock collar,
let me guess what happened.
Nothing at first, but he kept barking louder, and finally it kicked in, and you've never seen anything like it. I mean, the things have these little prongs on the inside that are supposed to work through the insulation of the dog's fur, but this was bare skin on this idiot's neck.
I tried to keep from laughing, but it was hard.
Then what?
It flipped him back over the table and put him on the floor. Honest, it was like he was struck by lightning, like a taser, only way worse. Well, every time the thing shocks him, he yells so it shocks him again.
What did you do?
Corbin paused as a waitress arrived and set our breakfasts in front of us. He watched her go and then continued.
What do you mean, what did we do? Nothing. Everybody hates the son of a bitch. That damn dog of his has bitten all of us. So he's flopping around on the floor, screaming and getting lit up like a Christmas tree, and we've all got our cell phones out taking video.
Henry nodded.
The Brotherhood of Blue.
Corbin sipped his coffee.
Anyway, one of the other officers posted the thing on YouTube, and it went viral. The Trib did a story, and Sandy Sandberg needed a fall guy. I was the one with the least seniority.
So, here you are in Hewlett.
You weren't hiring.
I sipped my own coffee. I'm always hiring. The young deputy forked a strawberry.
Besides, it's nice over here, and I met a girl in Sundance.
The bear and I looked at each other. There is always a girl. I remembered the pit bull we'd dropped on the young man last winter.
Do you like your dog, Deputy?
He smiled.
More than me.
We started eating in earnest, and the conversation died down. Corbin, the healthiest of us, finished his oatmeal and fruit and straightened his paper placemat before introducing the subject of why we were there.
I hope you don't mind me calling, but I figured after you'd helped out with that mess in Campbell County.
I leaned back in the booth. This star for hire. He looked up, a little panicked.
I can't pay you anything, Walt.
That was a joke.
Oh.
He gathered his napkin from his lap.
Did you stop on your way in and look at the accident site?
We did, but it was wet and kind of hard to tell what had happened. Dougherty glanced around at the crowded cafe again and whispered,
There was a lot of blood.
Rain must have washed it away. He nodded.
Yeah, I mean, they had him stabilized down at County Memorial in Sundance, but they moved him to Rapid City. Too small a hospital to keep him here.
He?
The victim. Last name Torres. 22 years of age, out of Tucson, Arizona. He's got a bunch of priors, mostly drugs, along with a few domestics, and an aggravated assault and weapons charge.
Had he been drinking?
Corbin shrugged. A little, according to the doctors, but nothing too bad.
Current condition?
Assorted, along with a whopper of a traumatic brain injury. B-Way.
He looked up at me.
That's what they call him, B-Way. Has got a diffuse axonal injury where the nerve cells are stretched and sheared inside the skull. He was out for 6 hours, then came to momentarily, but he was acting strange. He's pretty messed up.
Anybody ask him about the accident when he regained consciousness?
I did. I tried to get a statement from him, but he wasn't capable of coherent thought, never mind speech.
Think he will be?
Dougherty shook his head.
I really don't know. Neither do the doctors, I think. They put him back in an induced coma. I nodded and then glanced at Henry, who continued to gaze out the windows. You filed a report with DCI's accident investigation?
I did, and a guy named Novo is coming up tomorrow.
The bear finally joined the conversation.
Mike Novo?
Yeah, you know him?
Henry smiled.
He is the motorcycle expert in Cheyenne.
I watched Corbin for a moment.
So what happened?
We got a call from Chloe, a local girl who was working in one of the tents up here part-time. She was headed home when she saw a guy on a motorcycle lying on the side of the road.
I'm going to need to speak with her. He nodded.
It was about 1 in the morning on Saturday night, and with the traffic we get around Sturgis, it must have just happened. I got there right as the EMTs did, and they scooped him up and took him to Sundance. Herb Robinson, who owns the wrecker service, came and got the bike, but then hauled it over to the Rapid City Police Department impound yard. I guess Robinson had past problems with bikers who liberate their bikes without paying, and the Rapid cops are the only ones with a fenced yard.
What do you think happened?
The patrolman pushed his empty oatmeal bowl away and rested his elbows on the table.
I think somebody hit him.
Passing him?
Rear-ended? On purpose.
He stared at me.
The bike was hit on the side, hard, and forced into the ditch.
There's a culvert out there near the turnoff to the tower.
Yep, we saw it when we stopped.
Right.
There was a pause.
What do you think?
I think you can jump to conclusions in these situations. There are just too many possibilities. Maybe it was a deer. The other driver was drunk. The kid was on his cell phone.
Corbin crossed his arms.
He did have a cell phone.
Was it out?
His brains were out. Everything was out.
I gave him another second. I'll need to check the phone.
Sure.
Leaning back in my chair, I listened to it squeal and finished my coffee.
So, why call us?
I guess this kid is a big deal with the Tray-Tray Nomads, a motorcycle gang out of the Southwest, and things just got really weird really fast.
How do you mean?
Members of the club were in Sundance already for the rally, and strong-armed their way into seeing the kid at the medical center, but then he was transferred to Rapid City Regional, and I guess he wouldn't let them in the intensive care unit. When I got back up here on Sunday, they were waiting for me at the police station.
What do they want?
They wanted to know who did it, who hit B-Way.
He shook his head and swirled the coffee left in his cup.
They said there was no way that he'd just had an accident, and they wanted a name.
He leaned in.
I checked, and you know what? They're right. He's never had a traffic accident, everything else under the sun, but not even a speeding ticket.
Well, maybe they're just worried about the kid.
No, it's more than that. I'm staying at one of the little cabins the city provides on the north end of town, and when I got through on patrol yesterday, one of them was waiting for me there.
Okay.
Big guy. Kind of the enforcer, I guess.
Alone?
Yeah.
Okay.
Wanted to know where we were in all this, what we were doing about it, and I told him that we were doing the best we could, but with the rally, we didn't have the manpower to do a thorough investigation without help from DCI, but that they would be here pretty quick.
And was he satisfied with that?
Not really.
He studied me.
Can I ask you a question?
Shoot.
What's a 1% mean?
He shoved his empty cup away.
When the enforcer, the strong-arm guy, said I'd better find out who did it, he said I'd better or I was going to meet the real 1%.
I nodded, allowing the information to surface in my memory. The Hollister riot in 47. It was just a little after World War II, and they had this motorcycle rally in California in this little town. A lot more bikers showed up than they had anticipated.
And there were riots?
Not really, but there were a lot of drunk bikers and racing in the streets. Things got out of hand. Hollister had only a 9-man police department, and they panicked and threatened to use tear gas. And it got in all the newspapers. Somebody squeezed in near our table as I tried to remember the wording. I think it was the American Motorcycle Association that came out and said the trouble was caused by the 1% deviance
that tarnished the public image of both motorcycles and motorcyclists.
I looked up to see a man in a leather vest, jeans, and motorcycle boots. And that the other 99% of motorcyclists are good, decent, law-abiding citizens. He slipped off his Oakley sunglasses, revealing what looked like a once broken nose, and smiled down at Doherty through a prodigious mustache and goatee.
The AMA came out later and said they never made the statement, but that's bullshit.
I picked up my coffee cup, studied the dregs and then him, noting the do-rag under his reversed ball cap, his numerous earrings, and enough tattoos to print up a crew of merchant marines.
Aye.
He reluctantly averted his eyes from Corbin to me.
Aye.
Were you there?
He looked confused.
Huh?
Hollister. He breathed a laugh.
No, bud, before my time. You?
Before mine, too. He nodded.
Excuse me, but you mind if I continue my conversation with Officer Doherty here?
Yep, I do. We're eating our breakfast and we don't like being disturbed.